The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Weekend coming up. Never fear, we'll do it again next week. It's just rolling past. Lots of things to report tonight in Hour 3 with Dr. Henry Nyman. Don't miss that. We do as much as we can to try to occasionally step away from the coronavirus theme. And this will be 2 hours I think you'll enjoy, even if you don't fashion yourself a major history buff. I want you to take a look at the pictures and listen to what we're going to be discussing. It's very interesting. You need to keep in mind that only 80 years ago, around 1940, the world really was at the threshold, if I can phrase it this way, of making a decision. Or some would say of having a decision made for it in terms of which direction we were going to go. Germany had an entirely different agenda than the so-called Allies did. The Allies owned, operated, controlled, programmed, and directed by the international invisible banking cartel. Germany, the size of Texas, ended up invading Russia to stop Stalin and communism from rolling all the way through Eastern Europe to the shores of the English Channel and then probably beyond that. That's what really happened. Operation Barbarossa. Do a little studying on that. Understand, Germany found out that Stalin had at least 1 million troops all facing forward in their lexicon, i.e., forward into Eastern Europe and forward into Western Europe and forward to the English Channel. They were going to roll through and convert the Western world, the Western Christian world, to a godless communist nightmare. That was the plan. And Germany attacked, captured, I think the German army and military captured almost 1 million, maybe more than 1 million troops. Soviet troops, communist troops, each small contingent. I don't know if it was down to the platoon level or not, but there were commissars all throughout the Soviet military. You have to remember always that there was no retreat. If you took a step backward, you were shot from behind by a Soviet commissar with a submachine gun. There was no retreat. It was an endless flood tide of humanity being poured into Eastern Europe and then all the way across, then basically near the Channel anyway. The war was not fought and won by the British and the Americans. 90% of World War II was fought on the Eastern Front. Germany, Christian Germany, against godless Soviet Bolshevik Russia. Soviet Russia. And now what we're seeing here is the exact building blocks of communism on vulgar display all around this country. And for those of you who think, oh, communism went away, Jeff, what are you talking about? It's gone. Oh, no, it's not gone. Oh, no, it never went away. Oh, no. Go look on the site and just do a little search right there in the little search bar at Rents. You'll see it. And type in 22 goals of communism. Just type that in, 22 goals of communism, and read those goals, which were read into the congressional record in 1963. I believe it was Representative Herlong. But you need to read the goals of communism and ask yourself, is that what we're seeing here? And I think for those of you who haven't already read it, you'll be quite shocked. Now, what I've said is my own personal opinion, multiple opinions on things. This is nothing necessarily to do with our first guest tonight, Harry Cooper and Shark Hunters, but I just like to lay this out here. You younger people don't understand World War II because you've been brainwashed and programmed by the winners who lie and lie and lie to this day about what really went on in that war. The winners write the story. Keep that in mind. The butchers were not the so-called evil Germans. I won't use the N-word with them. It's just something that wasn't. It was a Western propaganda device. And it irritates me. I learned about World War II, the reality of it, what really happened when I was at the university. And it's always angered me ever since. The lies are monumental. There's a story I got today. Let me see if I can find it real quick. I may not be able to, but I'm going to give it a try here. All right. It's right there. There it is. You need to read this one, too. It'll be up there. Russia from RussiaInsider.com. An Israeli historian discovers the 6 million Holocaust figure was invented at a Zionist conference in 1944 during the last year of the war. Read it. Just think about it. I'm not going to get into a Holocaust debate here with anybody. There's no need to. What happened, happened. And what happened is up to you to determine what happened on the basis of your research and how you perceive the data. There's a lot of data out there. All right, so we're still, right now, today, living in the end times of World War II. The victory of communism, 90% of World War II was fought on the Eastern Front. The victory of communism over Christian Germany and all of its allies is what we're dealing with right now. Look it up on Rents, 22 goals of communism. Just read it and let it percolate. You know, if Harry Cooper had been named Harry Hooper, we could have called him Happy Harry Hooper. But he's Cooper. Still, Happy Harry Cooper is good enough. Welcome back, Admiral. How are you?
I'm getting dizzy.
What's the matter?
Just listening to your monologue. It's really interesting. But I have to tell you, not all the commissars were evildoers. I was a commissar of the Soviet Union. Did you know? You knew that.
Yes. It was a nice gesture. And we honor men and women who fought under all flags. They were all mostly, but what I said about the Eastern Front and commissars behind,
that was a whole different thing. Yeah, I was a commissar to the Peace to the Oceans Committee, and my CIA was aware of it.
Right.
But no, you're right. During the war, the commissars would shoot people, their own troops, in the back if they didn't plunge on forward and get killed by the Germans. So you either get killed by the Germans or by your own commissar. And in Russia, there is no such thing as World War II. It's the Great Patriotic War. The United States and England helped by sending them a couple of plane loads of stuff. Other than that, they did it all. I've been through the Red Army Museum several times there.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything is about... And on the land war, yes, it was the Russians for sure. They used up so many, I don't know how many million of their soldiers got killed because a lot of them didn't even have guns. They were supposed to pick up the guns from the dead guys in front of them.
In front of them, yeah.
Then they became dead, and the guy behind them picked up their rifle.
They were walking over 3 and 4, 5 deep sometimes. The Germans... We're literally having weapon meltdowns because they were shooting constantly. The barrels of their machine guns, automatic weapons, and so forth, were actually melting. They could not shoot fast enough. This is called a human horde that never stopped, and it just kept coming and coming and coming. And all right, but that's
pretty
that.
Much
now,
what the Chinese did in the Korean War.
Correct. Oh, totally correct. All right. Now, what I'd like to invite all of you to do is go to Rents.com, or you can go to RentsRadio.com, but either one. Rents.com, and look in the little square banner. It's right there to the left of Trump. It says, Tonight's Guest, click here. So you can click right there, and it'll take you to the guests. So there it is. Just scroll down, and whoops, does he have the wrong link up there, Harry?
I don't know. I'm looking at 58 pictures here of airplanes and some submarines.
Where are you seeing that?
Hold on a sec. Let me back into it. I first went to Rents, and hold
it
on,
should be where you tonight's guests.
Yeah, no, it isn't. You go to Rents. Hold on a sec. Jeez.
All right.
Rents.
Oh, we'll get there. Hold on. This is fun radio. Hold on.
Oh, yeah. But you scroll down in the middle, underneath Trump, I think it is. Well, now I've lost it. Oh, jeez.
Well, there's a little box there. It says, Jeff Rents Program, Tonight's Guest. Click here. Right? Listen live.
Listen live, click here.
Yeah.
And then it says Harry Cooper, and then it says photos. Yeah, there you go. Well, like Todd said when he clicked in, I sound like I'm off my meds today. And I don't even take meds, but I guess I ought to start taking meds so that I have an excuse for sounding like I'm off in la-la land.
Okay, what I want you all to do is look for the listen live, click here. That'll bring up guests right away. Yeah, no, we've got it. The link is wrong. We'll get it fixed. It should be the guests link. Okay, link to guests. I'm writing to my webmaster who's half a world away. Link to guests does not link to guests.
Okay.
Is that profound? I'm pretty good at this stuff.
Yeah, that sounds like a major problem there. When the guest link doesn't link to the guest.
I'm going to follow it up with a better one. Please link guests to guests. How's
that? Succinct, right to the point.
All right, thank you. Thank you very much. Or as somebody else would say, thank you very much. Now, let's see. So just please go down to the left side of the second big splash art piece, which is primarily pictures of El Capitan in the Oval Office. Look for the Jeff Rents Program, Tonight's Guests. Click here. But you have to go down below that box where it says Listen Live. Click here. And that'll take you right to the guest page. And you need to go there.
I'm so confused.
No, you're not
confused.
Remember
Vinnie Barbarino on the Sweat Hogs? I'm so confused.
Well, that was his problem, not ours.
Yeah.
All right. I never did like that program much.
I didn't watch it much either, but it was cool in the hippie days because everybody wore bell bottoms and weird. It was a good time growing up. So what the heck? He's the only one out of that bunch that went on to fame and fortune. John Travolta, and now he's my neighbor. He lives about 20 miles from here.
Well, that shows you're equitable about sexual preference, and as far as neighbors go, that's good. Very good.
He hasn't come over here, and I don't know where to find him, nor am I looking for that.
He's got airplanes on his property, doesn't he?
Yeah, but
didn't
I don't.
He used to?
I know.
But you have an RV, so never mind.
It's and I got Sasquatch in my jungle behind my house. You know that.
I do. I've seen pictures of it. Shocking.
It's a great place. Let me tell you, though, on that screen back deck that I have where I'm surrounded on three sides by heavy jungle, and it's just beautiful. And I sit out there, and I can write my books out there now, and it's just fantastic. A breeze blowing through there, and every so often an owl comes and sits in a tree right outside the porch. Sure beats living in Chicago.
Which you do know about.
Oh, yeah. I lived there for a long time. I had to shoot a guy once when he was breaking into my house at midnight.
Well, it's the least you could do.
Yeah, it changed his attitude about robbing houses.
Just
when
make
he got
sure
out of
that
hospital, he went to a trade school, got a job.
Ah, see. Uh-huh. And?
I'm still waiting for the thank you note.
Well, you're lucky he didn't get out of the hospital and file a multi-million dollar lawsuit against you. They do that.
Yeah, he tried to get me arrested, and we appeared in court, and the judge chewed him out, threw him out of court.
He did try, uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, because they was going to try to get us to drop the breaking and entering charge against him. There's no tough bananas. You broke in, you got shot, too bad.
Now, they did. What is commonly instructed is that if you have to shoot someone in your house and they've broken in, make sure you finish the job. That's all you hear about.
Yeah, that's true. Empty the magazine. That's what I taught my daughter. I bought her a 380 semi-automatic. She just turned 29 years old today. Had 8:01 this morning was her birthday, 29 years ago.
Happy birthday, Megan.
Happy birthday, Megan. So I gave her that, and she's a good shot. I taught her gun safety because I was a weapons guy and a weapons specialist in the service. I taught her gun safety and marksmanship, and she's even a better shot than me now. And I told her, if you have to use the gun, empty the magazine. Not one shot, but empty the magazine.
Good, Dad. Good job. Good job. I'm sending one more note off here. Let's see.
Dear Norberto, please put the guest pictures with the guest pictures.
Yeah. This is linked to... Oh, do you know anyone who's got the plague yet?
Nope.
See?
Nope, and we live in one of the most open states now. Ron DeSantis, our governor, he's even better than I thought he was going to be. This guy is an ass kicker just like Donald Trump, and I wouldn't be surprised that when Trump leaves office in 4.5 years, Ron DeSantis would be the guy that takes his place. We've been open since last Monday, restaurants at 25%, but as of this coming Monday, restaurants at 50%. And he says, hey, this virus doesn't like sunshine, so get out to the beach, kill the virus. He wants the schools to get going again with the next semester. Just about everything is back to normal, thank God. My wife was so excited. She got to go to TJ Maxx. And she didn't buy anything, but she just got to stand with all the people in there. So, no, we don't know anybody.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Very, very nice.
And in our county, I think only 11 people have died out of 150,000 people. And it's tragic that those people died, but it turns out now they had other problems, too. So,
hey, we need to be Americans. We have always been different and unique. Other countries have had unique and different cultures and people as well, of course. But we need to stand up and, well, the economy is destroyed. You're not going to glue Humpty Dumpty back together again, but some semblance of an economy must be reconstructed. We are Americans. We're tough. We need to stand up and face this overblown virus. It is. The statistics are up in great disarray. There are arguments on both sides of the aisle, back and forth, both sides of the fence, back and forth. We're dealing with something that's unusual. It is deadly, but the chances of actually contracting it and dying are 0.033. There's another one today I saw, 0.012. So,
yeah.
It's, you know, 45,000 people a year die on the highways. 3 million are injured.
You got a better chance of getting shot dead in my old hometown of Chicago.
I would believe that. Yeah, I would believe that. Okay, hold on here. Oh, poor Germany. Poor Germany. Crushed at the end of the war. Communists took over. The Stasi, all of it.
Yeah.
500,000 Germans have applied for permits to take part in Stuttgart lockdown protests, but police have restricted the number that can participate to only 5,000 because of social distancing.
Oh, yeah, it's convenient, isn't it?
It's all an op. Just like the Russian colonel in the GRU said, I sent that to you. I hope you looked at it. It's only 9 minutes. He told the whole story. I'll send it to you again. Sounds like you didn't see it. It's enough.
I've still got 107 emails on one incoming roster, and I've got 47 on the other incoming email. So I've got my work cut out for me.
Well, I'll send you this. You got to look at this.
Okay.
It's all there. It's a geopolitical, financial, military, sociological coup. It's an op. They're using the virus to do it. And most everybody who is intelligent now gets that. If they're exposed to
that
information, they get it.
Many people that I've talked to refer to it as the scamdemic.
Plandemic, scamdemic, whatever.
Yeah.
You got it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Hold on a minute. We'll be right back with Admiral Cooper, and we'll start our picture story tonight for you. Coming up next. Okay, welcome back. Here's just got this in. The USS Theodore Roosevelt, our nuclear carrier, has been in port in Guam since late March after the outbreak of the virus discovered on board. More than 4,000 of the nearly 5,000 crew members have gone ashore since then for quarantine and or isolation. Earlier this month, hundreds of sailors who tested negative twice began returning to the ship to get ready to hopefully set sail again. Guess what? Five sailors who tested negative twice have now come down with the virus for a second time and have been pulled off the ship. Or what does that tell us? What's the big message, the big picture here? What's the big message? Vaccine? Forget about it. Forget about it. If they're being infected twice, and we don't know the sequencing of this second infection, but I hopefully it'll be published at some point, we can find out. Is it a mutation or is it the same virus? Part two, coming back for another swipe at the host. We'll see, but that just came across the desk here. Okay, what we're going to do is take a look at a unique part of World War II from the German perspective, and it has to do with their heavy aircraft, very heavy aircraft, and some of those planes, they're big four-engine FW-200s, and working with the U-boat packs to coordinate attacks on convoys going to take free American taxpayer-paid-for weapons to Joseph Stalin, primarily, through the northern route. So those convoys were interdicted and interrupted. It's interesting to see how the planes and the submarines worked together, how the submarines used their deck guns in many cases to fire on ships, how some of the planes actually went out working in concert with the submarine wolf packs and were able to bomb some of the transport ships. It's a part of the war that nobody knew about much. Now, there's another part, and that's the fact that Germany kept producing these enormous aircraft, which all of you are going to get to see. So if you go to the homepage and you look on the left-hand side and you click on Tonight's Guests, click here, it'll take you right to Tonight's Guests. We got it fixed. So there you go. All right. I'm sorry. I've got to do this. The top story on the homepage. Someone sent me a video. It's only about a minute long. And I think the guy's in Ireland. He works on 5G towers. He was given modules to put into this brand new enormous 5G tower. And he was told, do not open this module. This is about the size of a briefcase, let's just say. Do not open this. Just put it in, plug it in, make sure it works, fire it up, blah, blah, blah. Well, he opened it. He opened it up. And what did he find? He found a big circuit board in there. Very advanced design. And the label on the circuit board says COV.19. Coronavirus. COVID-19. That is the name on the hidden, do not open circuit board. That's the name. What is this? Just a coincidence? I don't think so, and neither do any of you. This is a very big story, so by all means, take a look at it. People have been saying there's a link between 5G and the coronavirus for a long time. This may be proof positive of that link. I leave it to you. Okay. Let's go to guests and pull up all these pictures. Lots and lots of pictures. Look right under Happy Harry's name, and you'll see it. It says Photos. Click on that, and look at all those pictures that Harry sent me this morning. How did you ever get the time to pull all those pictures together?
I had help.
Who helped you?
My buddy out there in, where the hell is that, Ashland?
Ashland, Oregon. That's it.
Ashland, Oregon. That's it. Yeah. I had some of them because some of our members were involved in these earlier convoy battles. In the early days of the convoy battles up in the Arctic, the convoys were getting decimated for several reasons. The Luftwaffe and the U-boats were working together before the planes got diverted to other things, and it looks to me like a lot of this was Goering's arrogance. If it flies, it's mine, kind of thing. But convoy PQ-17 and convoy PQ-18, which stopped for a while in Iceland to refuel and get whatever minor repairs done they needed, then they pressed onward towards Archangel, and they just got shot to hell. Not only the Focke Wulf 200s, the Condors, but also JU-88s, and the U-boats were packed around them, and they just got shot all to hell. And unlike when you get sunk in the Caribbean or something like that, where you can, or even in the North Atlantic, where you can sit on a lifeboat for a week or two at a time, up there, 3 minutes in the water, 4 minutes, and you're done. The water is below 32 degrees. Salt water up there in the Arctic ranges around 30 or a little less. You get in that water, get soaked right away, and you're done. And so it was just a horrible situation. But like I say, nothing good about a war.
No, unless you're a banker. Okay.
Okay.
We're going to look at these pictures now. There's a surprise picture in there, too, that I'm waiting to see what Harry has to say about when we get there. Okay, so out of your original six pictures you sent this morning, we have 58 now.
20-something.
Oh, all right. Well, we've got 58. We've got 60, so we're good.
Yeah.
This will be fun. All right, let's take a look. And these are all thumbnails, so just click on them, and they'll open up to a larger format. Okay, first picture, number one.
Yeah, the whole first row you have there, the whole top row, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 photos, those are all the same type of aircraft. That's a BV-138 made by Bowman Voss, the same people that built Bismarck, and a lot of U-boats and all sorts of ship. And they also repaired, QE-2 when she ran into something off the east coast of the United States. They brought her over there, and then they found out what she hit over there was another one of Teddy Kennedy's cars. The first one, the color one, which shows the BV-138 flying over a Type 7 U-boat, that's a print we sell. And the prints are hand-signed by 16 veterans, including some of the top guys, Eric Topp, Gunter Rall, who was the third most successful fighter pilot, et cetera, et cetera. So this was an unusual airplane. The pilots, from what I'm told, really hated it until they got into the air. They had a hard time seeing over the nose of the plane because they were sitting awfully high. Landing and takeoffs were a little tough. But once they got into the air, these things could cruise forever because they had diesel engines, three engines. The two outboard, number one and number three engines, had three bladed props. But the center engine over the fuselage was a bigger engine, and it swung a four-bladed prop. And I don't know how any aeronautical engineer would think this was a good idea, but it worked. And you remember we talked a couple of years ago about one of these guys landing on the lake at Berlin in the midst of heavy ground fire to pick somebody up. We never said who. But these were the workhorse. It was a medium-sized flying boat. There were bigger ones, which we'll see later, but these guys were the workhorse, uglier than hell. And we even
got a
P-38
Lightning tail structure. Interesting.
The German flyboys liked that kind of a tail, either that or like on the FW-290s or JU-290s. I'm sorry, they had the fork tail. I don't know why, but and the big 390 that went down to South America that. Didn't that one have a three-prong tail? Let me see. Yep, two-prong, I'm sorry.
Two.
So they're just unusual as all get out. And they armed them for what that was worth. I mean, if an Allied fighter like a Spitfire or a P-51 got after it, ball game was over. They didn't have a prayer. They were slow and cumbersome, and they only had a couple of guns. But they tried to stay out of the combat areas because they were more into cargo.
We'll see that, too, in a picture here in a minute. I didn't have any idea they had diesel engines for airplane motors back then.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
you think
weird.
Of a clunky diesel. How can it generate the RPMs necessary to propel something. Fascinating.
Yeah, maybe, you know, sometimes you don't need that many RPMs if you got the right pitch in the blade. But diesels are notoriously slow for spooling up, unlike a recip engine that's got 13-to-1 compression or something like that. That's why why the turboprop planes are more in demand for anti-submarine work, because they can get down on the surface and spool mm-hmm. up the engines real quick, faster than a jet would. So mm-hmm. recip engines with gasoline has its advantages. But this guy with diesel, and they had a pretty fair fuel tank, so they could cruise for a long time.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, picture number two shows one of these up at a dock, kind of holding onto some ropes, and somebody's popped up out of the nose, and they're, I don't know what he's doing. But it's interesting.
He's probably helping with the lines. Look at the difference in the engines between the center engine and the two outboard engines.
Oh, yeah.
Much, much bigger.
What a strange-looking bird.
Yeah, they built a lot of weird-looking planes.
Ugly duckling.
Yep.
Okay, picture number three is very interesting. This is at sea, and you can see it. There's the bow of a U-boat there, and one of these seaplanes has come up, and they're going to transfer something.
Yeah, they transfer fuel. That's a famous picture, U-255, which was under command of, what the heck was his name, Rech, Reinhard Rech. And he was a member of Shark Hunters, and he sent us one of these pictures, and they were refueling that BV-138 at sea. Not far out.
Really?
At sea,
so the U-boat was refueling the seaplane. They had diesel on board.
Right.
And they were, oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
So they throw a line over. You can see there's people in the water next to the nose. They're in, looks like a dinghy of sorts.
Yeah, three people in a rubber boat.
And they're dragging a line over there to the plane.
Yeah, to pump in some fuel.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Okay, number four. Another picture of it just sitting there. Kind of looks kind of neat there. It's got a nice paint job on it, I think, too.
Yeah, and they look good in the water. Well, they look less ugly in the water.
They look better. better in the water. Hey, what
less
a strange
ugly.
Design. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this plane, as you heard Harry say, appeared in a lake in Berlin in the last days of Berlin's stand. And it is believed that some very special people were taken out of the bunker a week in advance, perhaps, and perhaps taken over to this plane and flown out of there. So there you go. All right, next picture. Go ahead.
Next picture.
Color picture. Or colorized, I don't know which, but it looks like an original color picture.
Probably was. Germany was using color photos, color films, before the U.S., and Eva Braun was getting color photos for her movies.
Oh, she was, that's right.
Yeah. We've got a couple of them on our website. We've got several hundred films on our website that people can watch. Just go to sharkhunters.com and then click on multimedia and click on any of the things that find interesting there. And you can watch those movies for just pennies a day. Listen to our radio shows. Look at the past issues of the KTB magazine.
Nice. It's such a treasury of material there. It really is.
Tons of stuff.
Yeah. All right, number
that was five.
Six.
And if you look
number
closely,
five.
You can see the radio loop on top of that aircraft, so they can, that's their RDF loop.
So I see it. All right, there's, I don't know who these people are in front of that plane. Picture number six.
Right. They probably don't want their names known for fear of embarrassment to be stuck with such a ugly damn airplane.
Well, that's not there weren't that many people on that plane. That's obviously
no. That was not the crew for the plane, but maybe it's the crew for several of the planes in the squadron. If you look behind them, you'll see I think that's a Junkers on the big floats. That's a seaplane as opposed to the BV-138, which is a flying boat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They had all sorts of strange aircraft.
Yeah, that's picture 7. You'll see the float plane.
Right.
Is right there. And the other one is being trucked down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the 138, BV-138.
Wow. That's a neat picture. Wonder who found that one.
I can't imagine. Somebody up there in Ashland, Oregon.
All right. Now, the next one, number 8, shows taxiing, just moving around. That's hard to, it's really, I look at these things and I think diesel engines? You just don't think of the diesel engine as having the kind of RPMs and they got certainly the torque, but you wouldn't think that they go that fast.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting wartime picture.
Yep.
Very unique airplane. All right. Next row. Last picture. I think of these. Yes, last picture of these type aircraft, and there are three of them have been hoisted up on a transport plane, ship, where they take three planes, they flatten the top of it, flat top, and they're going to be transporting these to somewhere.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And they've got the crane on the back end of on that would be the, I guess that the stern back there where the crane is. And they can just put these guys into the water and let them take off and do whatever they're doing, come back, land next to the ship, put the crane on them, and put them back aboard.
The ship is named the Buzzard. You see that?
Yeah, I think it might be pronounced Bussard, but you can call it Buzzard if you like.
All right. Okay, now, next picture. That's second picture in line 2.
Right.
The
FW-200.
That's a remarkable airplane. The story of the development of that plane, several crews died in these. They had problems with the tail, for some reason, breaking off of the plane. If it came down and touched the tail or taking off, they had some catastrophic crashes of these things. I've read about them in the development stage.
Airframe design problem.
Right. But they were fixed, and this was a real workhorse. That was a tough plane for a lot of reasons. Tell us more about it.
Well, the Focke-Wulf 200 was designed originally as a passenger liner, an airliner that could be converted over into being a bomber. I believe Hitler had one for his own personal use after the war got going. Prior to that, he was flying an Alta Tanta U, the old Ju-52. But then he got into one of these Condors that had armor plating around where he was sitting. In the early parts of the war, they were using these guys as eyes of the U-boat fleet, looking for convoys to the west of England, and then they could send the wolf packs out to get them. But then, like I say, they got switched over to Hermann Göring, and that was the end of that story. A lot of the U-boat guys started out as flyboys. We highlighted them in our magazine a while ago. There were well over 100, including probably the most famous flyboy converted to U-boat commander was Reinhard Hardhagen, commander of U-123, Knight's Cross with Oak Leaf. He was the 20th most successful U-boat skipper. Günther Heinrich had been a flyboy. Mm-hmm. He was a member of Shark Hunters. So many of them. You know, when you're an officer in the military, you may be serving in the Army or the Marines or Navy, Air Force, whatever, but if another branch needs an officer, you just change your uniform because you're an officer, and they put you where they want you. And they needed U-boat guys, and after a while, geez, they were taking everybody. They were taking guys who were instructors who had never been to sea before. Otto Kretschmer, for instance, some of his best officers got transferred off to get their own submarines, and he asked for submarine officers who were combat hardened, and they gave him a guy. What the heck was his name? I can't remember his name off the top of my head. He was a member of Shark Hunters. I met him. Von Knebel Dobritz, that's it. Heinrich H.J. Von Knebel Dobritz. He had been a desk officer in Berlin, and so they sent him out to Kretschmer to be his first watchkeeping officer, otherwise we would know it as an executive officer. And he had never been to sea before, and so on the 7th War Patrol of Kretschmer and U-99, this fella came aboard. It was his first combat patrol, and Kretschmer had pretty well decimated a convoy and was dead tired. He had been up for nearly 2 days straight, and they were out of torpedoes. They were headed back towards home, and Kretschmer went to get some shut-eye, and he told Von Knebel Dobritz, do not dive the boat under any circumstance. But then about a mile away, the Royal Navy started beating up on U-100, which was Shepka's boat. And as soon as Von Knebel heard the depth charges going off, he pulled the plug and dived. And Otto woke up and got out of bed, got out of his rack. Too late to stop the dive. You get 1,000 tons going down, and you can't turn it around. Turned out it was the first time ever in history that a submarine was detected by ASDEC, which was forerunner of sonar, was detected by ASDEC, tracked by ASDEC, attacked by ASDEC, and sunk by ASDEC without ever seeing the submarine. And so Kretschmer, well, they lost two men, and a third man, his engineering officer, went down below to open the valves to let the boat sink so the Brits didn't get it. And Kretschmer warned him. He said that the boat is riding on the vents right now. Open them slowly and get out of here. And Kretschmer was sitting in the, up on the bridge, and all of a sudden there was this huge whoosh of air coming up, and his boat sank right out from under him.
So most of the men got off.
Yeah, all but three. And he said so. He had always been of the opinion that a sinking ship does not create a suction that will pull somebody down. He said he stood at attention. You had to know Otto Kretschmer. He stood at attention on his bridge as his submarine sank out from under him. He said, so you see, Harry, I did not desert my submarine. It deserted me.
Same
and they almost lost him, too, because he had to swim about 100 yards. He was still wearing his leathers in the water, his boots, everything was full of water. He finally got there and grabbed a hold of the scramble nets on HMS Walker. And they didn't realize he was there, and so they started to pick up headway, and somebody yelled, oh, wait a minute, there's the captain. And he told me he was just about ready to let go. He didn't have any more strength. So they stopped the destroyer, and they sent down one British and one German sailor to drag Kretschmer up, and they flopped him, he said, like a dead fish on the deck. And he ordered his sailor to go back down in the water to get his cap. So when I was in his house asking him about that, I said, what in the hell were you doing? Why would you send him down? He says, I had to surrender my submarine, and I had to be in proper uniform. Okay.
Wow.
Oh, he was absolutely military from
what
day
decorum.
One.
What, that's remarkable.
What a great man, though. One of the most honorable men I've ever met. Just an incredible man.
Well, you have met some of the giants of our time, just truly.
I've been fortunate,
For those of you who may say, well, what's he talking about, World War II? General George Patton shared my view, not exactly, but essentially, and said we fought the wrong enemy. He understood that communism was the scourge of the planet, and he was killed for his his realization. That's why he was murdered.
Well, that's one of the reasons. Another one, which most people don't realize, he kept asking what happened to the $3 billion worth of gold that disappeared out of the Reich Bank after the Allies swept through. And when you upset the bankers, just ask John F. Kennedy. He was going to get rid of the Fed.
Yeah, all true, all true. All right, so, hold on a sec. We're running late. We got to take our break. We'll come right back with Harry in just a couple minutes. Hold on.